at blogtalkradio.com. You can interact with the show by calling 760-888-5749 or use the hashtag PWPRadio on Twitter. Here are your hosts, Jay Leno and Will TLD Vafidez.
Just a few short days away from WWE Survivor Series 2012, and welcome right here to Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio. My name is Jersey Shore J, coming at you straight from the Jersey Shore, and welcome to our best of WWE Survivor Series show. It's a special 90-minute edition. We will go over the absolute best matches and moments in the history of WWE Survivor Series. But first, I want to get a couple plugs out of the way if you are listening. We were featured this week, actually, today on blogtalkradio.com featured show. So if you're listening, I thank you. But definitely get with us on Twitter at PW Powerhouse and on Facebook at www.facebook.com/Pro Wrestling Powerhouse. We have a couple new administrators on the page giving their insight and intellect on the world of professional wrestling, whether it's TNA, WWE, ROH, or Independence. Pro Wrestling Powerhouse provides everything you need to know about the world of professional wrestling. Also, visit ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com, where new content is going up on a very consistent basis. We're putting up new articles, new editorials, still working on our top 20 wrestlers of all time list, and much, much more going on here at Pro Wrestling Powerhouse. The future is bright, folks. That's the bottom line here. The future is bright. We're going to keep moving forward. Keep going in a positive direction. But before my co-host Will joins us today and we really dig deep into WWE Survivor Series, I just want to talk about a couple things that are going on present day in the wrestling business. First of all, today marks the 7-year anniversary of the death of Latino Heat Eddie Guerrero, and I'll always know him as Latino Heat because him, you know, he was one of my favorite wrestlers, and just as a lot of people out there, especially around my age group, we grew up watching Eddie Guerrero and enjoyed his in-ring ability, his work on the microphone. He was one of the most charismatic wrestlers of all time, and he died very tragically, very suddenly, and that took place 7 years ago today. So if you have any comments that you'd like to share about Eddie Guerrero before we get into the Survivor Series portion of the show, please call in. The number is 760-888-5749. Now, my convictions about Eddie Guerrero passing away and, you know, the late Chris Benoit, they're a little bit controversial because of the way the two gentlemen did pass away. I mean, Eddie Guerrero had a lot of struggles, trials, and tribulations throughout his life with, you know, substance abuse problems, whether it be drugs, alcohol, but he overcame them all, you know, and you give him a lot of props and a lot of credit during his career for overcoming that substance abuse and becoming a better man for it. You know, God knows what his legacy would have been if he would have lived on a few more years. If he was even in the WWE today, who knows the kind of brilliant material and WrestleMania moments he would have had. And, you know, rest in peace, Eddie Guerrero. You know, he's forever missed, one of the most beloved wrestlers of all time without a shadow of a doubt. Hell, even Chavo still gets over on his name today. You know, Chavo Guerrero, whenever he goes out there in a TNA ring, gets the Eddie chance going for him. So it's something that just won't seem to die, and rightfully so. Vicky Guerrero is still a major part of World Wrestling Entertainment. I know I still call it World Wrestling Entertainment, but it is technically WWE, and that's it. But I digress. Vicky Guerrero is still a major part of WWE. And each and every week, she's a big part of Monday Night Raw. Speaking of Monday Night Raw, last night was Raw, and what a Raw it was. There was a lot of controversy on whether or not this would be a great go-home show for Survivor Series. I personally thought it was. I thought they delivered from start to finish, a great pace show, many surprises, many great moments, awesome moments seeing Jerry the King Lawler come out. I was really shocked by the video footage of that WWE showed of Lawler getting CPR backstage after his heart attack. You know, the medics working on him and compressing his chest to try to get his heart to go again. But I did call it, folks. I was sitting there with my buddy Nick, and we're watching Raw, and I said, cue CM Punk's music. It'll be coming out any minute, and sure enough, CM Punk comes out and provides one of the most controversial moments we've seen in wrestling in quite a while. Not only did CM Punk use the heart attack in the storyline, but they also kind of made fun of it with Paul Heyman staging a heart attack in the middle of the ring. Very controversial. I loved it. I love that cheap heel heat. And they provided something that, you know, maybe you don't like. Maybe you're not a big fan of WWE going there. But they did, and they will continue to. Right now, I'm going to go to the lines. We've got a caller, 443 area code, 443. You're on the air with PWP Radio. What's your name and where are you from?
What's going on? This is Mr. Main Event Brian Waters in the building.
My man, Mr. Main Event in the house, Brian Waters. Hey, thanks a lot for joining us, Brian, man. We got a big show tonight. We're going with the best of WWE Survivor Series just shortly. But right now, I'm talking about the controversy surrounding last night's Raw with the CM Punk, Jerry Lawler, I guess, in-ring moment that they had. What are your thoughts on that?
Remember back around when Punk started first showing his heel turn and nobody was buying it, they were still cheering for him. And remember, it took an interaction with Jerry the King Lawler to make that fully allow Punk to become a full-fledged heel. Then last night, he legitimately tipped everybody off. And from a personal standpoint, I didn't like the heart attack reenactment, but I understood it. And so I thought it was good because now, you know, we're in the part where now with the internet and everything, we can pretty much predict a lot of stuff that's going to happen. But last night, I don't think anybody felt that they would do that. And it legitimately pissed people off. So, but at the end of the day, it's got its target, and that's what we want.
Exactly. The whole point of it is to get CM Punk over the heel and to piss the people off, like you said. It's really that simple, Brian. You know, you piss off the fans and you get a better reaction out of them when you come out of the curtain each and every night. And that's exactly what was accomplished by this. I don't think there's any question that Jerry Lawler didn't approve of this angle. You know, Jerry the King Lawler's been around forever.
Thank you.
Exactly. He's been around. He's the type of guy who's gotten cheap heel heat over the years. I mean, I hate kind of bringing this up, but wasn't he the guy to call Dustin Rhodes Goldust a faggot live on the air? You know what I mean? On Monday Night Raw, he doesn't have a lot of convictions out there. You know, he's an old school wrestler, and CM Punk kind of paid homage to him, I would think, by bringing this up. You know?
Yep.
Well, Ryan, are you gonna hang out with us tonight on PWP Radio, or are you just popping in for a little bit?
I'm gonna try to hang out a little bit, you know, a little bit for the lift. I'm driving home from work. I made a couple of stops, but you know, I hang around as long as I can. Let me.
All right, yeah, absolutely, man. You're on. As long as you want to hang out, you'll be on tonight on the panel. But we're gonna dip into the best of WWE Survivor Series match of the moments in just a second. But I'd like to introduce my co-host. His name is Mr. Will TLD Vasquez, coming to you live after volleyball. And here he comes, coming down the aisle. Will TLD Vasquez.
It's TLD.
Yeah.
Four-time tag team champion. I'm cuddly. I'm cute. I'm a champion.
Not enough of that. Will, what's up, man?
Yeah, next time we do that, Jay, you have to. It's in my contract that you have to do a dramatic fade. So next time you do that, I will have to fine you. It's in my contract.
All right, man. I got to look that over again, man. I haven't seen that contract in a while. But how do you do it tonight, Will?
Doing good. You know, got out of volleyball, you know, checking them old ladies and older men, you know, telling them that TLD is at the volleyball court, and you don't want to mess with TLD when he spikes you on the volleyball court.
Well, Will, we're going to dip into the best of WWE Survivor Series Masters of Moments for the majority of the night tonight. We've got Mr. Main Event Brian Waters on the line with us. But right now, I just want to talk a little bit about the controversy surrounding the CM Punk, Jerry Lawler moment on Raw last night. And I just gave my take on it. What were your thoughts on this controversial angle?
Well, it's not, you know, he got to say what he got to say. And it's all about getting the heat on CM Punk because people cheer him all the time. Jerry Lawler is loved. He's got billions of fans. You can't boo Jerry Lawler. And the fact that CM Punk interrupted him and that stunt that they did, I actually thought it was great. Now, I'm not saying the heart attack, you know, is great, but, you know, obviously they let Jerry Lawler approve to allow it to happen. So any fan that's offended, I guess in a way, you know, the election's over now, so now they can pretty much do whatever they want, you know, and they just did that last night, but they really, really pushed it. But it was great heat. I liked it, you know, and Mick Foley's involvement, so it still keeps that CM Punk and Mick Foley thing still going on, right, Jay? Because you know, in a few months, we're going to TLC.
That is only if they do book the Mick Foley CM Punk match in a TLC match. Then I will join you at TLC in Brooklyn, New York at the Barclays Center, but I believe it's possible. I think they're building towards that. And Mick Foley provided a great moment with his promo. He really went out there and went all out, and he gives me chills when he gets like that. He looked like serious madman Mick Foley. Hey, hey Brian, what do you think of Mick Foley's little promo on CM Punk last night?
Oh, my goodness. It was muddy. I felt like he was legitimately pissed, and it was almost as if he didn't even know that was going to happen. And if he did, I mean, if he did, he did. If he didn't, that was even better. But, I mean, he really delivered what everybody all over the world was saying. He put it out there.
Absolutely. And, folks, if you're listening tonight, make sure you check out Mr. Main Event Brian Waters' show at the Wrestling Realm right here on Blog Talk Radio. He provides a great intellectual show each and every week on blogtalkradio.com/wrestlingrealm. Join him on Facebook. Find the Wrestling Realm group. It's a very active group on Facebook, so definitely get on the Wrestling Realm. We're also a member of Team PWP at ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. So definitely check out Mr. Main Event, Brian Waters. But hey guys, right now, without further ado, you know, we covered the main moment of Raw last night, and I think that's just about all we want to talk about. Because Survivor Series 2000.
What about reviewing Raw? I'm at least an overview.
All right, yeah. If you got anything else to say about Raw, go for it.
Well, I thought they built up Survivor Series very, very well. I think that they sold the show a lot. No, that doesn't even make any sense what I just said. They sold the show very well. And I think that Survivor Series is definitely a must-watch show. They have, you know, the 8-man tag match was really great. I would love to see that at Survivor Series in elimination style. You know, so I think Raw was overall very entertaining. I really didn't skip over any matches on Raw. And The Miz is on the face team of Mick Foley. How could you not talk about that? That was the biggest moment on Raw.
Well, you know how I feel about The Miz. And unless he turns on Team Foley, and he gets, maybe he'll get the match with Mick Foley, who knows. But unless he turns to Mick Foley, it's not going to do anything for me because I don't buy him as a babyface in any way, shape, or form. And since we're on this topic, you know, I know you love him, Will, but hey, Brian Waters, man, what is your thoughts on The Miz and this possible babyface turn in the future?
I think he'll make a good babyface. You know, one thing I thought that this connects to the book, A Miserable Christmas. So I thought that this brings the highlight that maybe it was foreshadowing such a team between Foley and The Miz. You know, they maybe go out and do like some double book promotion. But I've been saying that, you know, I've been saying it, that I believe The Miz could be a convincing babyface, and I've been saying it for a while, especially with the whole now bullying campaign. He has a good story about when he was bullied on Real World, bullied on TV, I mean bullied backstage. When he came into the WWE, and nobody believed he could do it. So just as good as a heel, I think he could be just as good of a face.
Yeah, you know, I don't really buy it, though. He's been this cocky, arrogant superstar. He's basically been the same character his entire run in WWE thus far. You know, he's shown that psychotic, sadistic side at times, and I didn't really buy that. I wasn't a big fan of it, but to think he can be a babyface and come out, I think if anything, he'll be more of the babyface that let's say Kurt Angle was, where he'll embrace kind of like you suck chance at him or something along those lines, you know. I don't really see him as a typical run-of-the-mill babyface, you know. It's going to have to be there's got to be a shade of gray there somewhere, I think, because he's just, he's the Miz. He's a douchebag. That's his character. I don't know if he can get over full fledged as a babyface.
Well,
that's going to
be interesting, certainly, for the next couple months.
Go ahead, Brian. You go first, man.
No, I was just saying, it's definitely going to be interesting in the next couple of months.
Yeah, Will, what do you think, man? You think the next couple of months is going to be a big push towards the WrestleMania run with the Miz as the babyface?
Okay, are we good? All right. I believe the Miz will be cheered. He already gets cheered as it is. So why not give him a trial run and see what he does? He can easily go back as a heel. It's so easy. He's just on a face team. You know, so let's see what happens. If he betrays him, you know, he betrays him. But I think based on the reaction on Raw, I think he is going to be a babyface going into WrestleMania. They need more babyfaces right now. You know they do. They have the heel. They need a better babyface.
Well, it remains to be seen, and I hope I'm right. I hope the Miz just turns on Team Foley, and maybe he gets the match with Foley to kind of give him something to do, and he might get that piece of shit out of Mick Foley moment that I've been talking about for so many months here. I think CM Punk deserves it. But, yeah, Raw was a success last night. I think heading in to the Survivor Series pay-per-view, it will continue. It'll help the show. It'll help the buy rate out. It'll help everything that's going to happen going into the show. But, hey, I promised the fans tonight the best of WWE Survivor Series matches and moments, and that is exactly what we're going to give them. This is a show, folks, that has been going on since 1987. Year in and year out, it has provided moments, matches that will last the test of time. Basically, in my mind, Survivor Series was a show that was based around Hulk Hogan. Just as much of the moments in the 1980s were, you know, revolved around. You know, SummerSlam was revolved around Hulk Hogan, WrestleMania, Hulk Hogan. Royal Rumble, Hulk Hogan. Survivor Series, also Hulk Hogan. You know, you take the 4-on-4 or 5-on-5 aspect and stick Hulk Hogan right in the middle of it, becoming the sole survivor basically every year, and you got nothing but money. Throughout the years as it went on, he was a major part of it. You know, Hulk Hogan versus The Undertaker for the WWF Championship provided The Undertaker's first title run, you know. Many great moments and matches have happened at this show, and I'm going to kick it to you first, Will. I want your number one memory or moment in Survivor Series history.
Okay, my number one moment was because I was so angry at what happened. This is like the moment where I was so upset, is when Owen Hart made his own parents throw the towel in the ring and cost Bret Hart the WWE Championship. That moment to me was just so, I was so angry because I'm like the number one Bret Hart fan. Maybe not the number one, but he was my number one. Always was. And, you know, it was very, very upsetting when Owen Hart would cry and sob. And, you know, not to say Bob Backlund didn't deserve that championship because honestly I didn't think he was convincing, but it was the outside story of his parents throwing him the towel. A moment where you just hated Owen Hart. Like, you never thought Owen Hart could ever be a face again by doing a stunt like that. It was just one of those moments that, to me, as a kid, just stood out to me. That's my number one moment that I just will. I always watched the match, and it wasn't even a great match. But I think that outside story was just, that played all part of it. And just, man. Owen Hart, you got to believe that was just a great stunt.
Yeah, it was a fantastic match. I'll never forget being terrified when Bob Backlund had Bret Hart locked in the chicken wing for what seemed like an hour, man. He had him locked in that hole tight and wasn't giving up. And let me tell you what, the chicken wing's no joke, man. When I was a kid, we used to put each other in that hole, and it hurts like a bitch. So I could believe that Bret Hart was in a lot of pain, and Owen Hart did provide one of the top heel moments. And there have been many heel moments throughout Survivor Series history, but let me kick it out to Brian Waters real quick. Hey, Brian, man, what is your top Survivor Series match or moment in its history?
Well, Jay, first and foremost, I want to thank, you know, Pro Wrestling Powerhouse for the partnership we do with the Wrestling Round. We had a similar discussion on yesterday's show, and I made sure I told people to tune in to the, you know, the main event so to speak, of the episode, which will be tonight right here on ProWrestlerPowerhouse.com, because, you know, I want everybody to be able to get their moments in just as well, because you've done a good job in getting everybody ready for the Survivor Series. So with that being said, my favorite moment, 1995, something that hadn't been done yet, the wild card match, when you took Shawn Kemp's Team Michaels, which featured him, Psycho Sid, the British Bulldog, and Ahmed Johnson, and put them against Owen Hart, Yokozuna, Razor Ramon, and Dean Douglas. Survivor Series 95 was one of my, I call it my famous five tapes of wrestling that I had growing up, so I would rotate those tapes in every day after school, so I almost knew the whole pay-per-view by heart, but that was like one of my favorite moments because I had never seen it done before. Just to see, you know, Shawn Michaels teaming up with Psycho Sid, who he had history with because Sid had cost him, so to speak, the title at WrestleMania 11. Or even Razor Ramon teamed up with Dean Douglas, the man who he had beat for the Intercontinental Championship after he had vacated the title, got the title handed to him from Shawn Michaels. And it was just something that I wish that we could see nowadays again, something like that, wild card match where you put the heels and baby faces on one team.
Yeah, thanks for the kind words before you started there, but I agree with you, man. Survivor Series 1995 was awesome. But one of my favorite moments was not only that match, but the main event of that show was absolutely tremendous. Bret Hart defeated Diesel in no disqualification match for the WWF Championship. And let me tell you what, you want to talk physicality, psychology, and just an all-around awesome match. These two really beat the shit out of each other that night at Survivor Series 1995.
That was a start towards the scene to Diesel becoming a heel again.
Yeah, and it was towards the end of Diesel's run. I mean, he had held the WWF Championship for the majority in 1995, if I believe I'm correct on that. And, you know, the run was kind of coming to an end. He went over to WCW shortly thereafter with his last major moment in the WWF at WrestleMania the next year. But, yeah, Diesel and Bret Hart really set the night on fire. And I want to give you my number one top moment. And that's one of them, but definitely my number one moment was, I really dig those 1980s and early 90s Survivor Series with Hulk Hogan because it just seems special. It was almost so cheesy with the names of the teams, and that doesn't happen anymore. You just have, like, Team Foley against Team Ziggler. But back at Survivor Series 1990, you had a bunch of awesome matches. You had the Warriors against the Perfect Team. You had, you know, the Alliance, what was a bunch of guys representing America that weren't from America against the Mercenaries, who were, you know, a bunch of guys not from America, but Sergeant Slaughter was, of course, the head of the team. But one of my favorite matches of all time at Survivor Series was a clean sweep, and it was the Vipers against the Visionaries, and the Visionaries consisted of the Model Rick Martel, the Warlord, and Power of Glory taking on Jake Roberts, Jimmy Snuka, and the Rockers. The Visionaries completely swept that team. And the cool thing about it is, on this show, they had a special grand finale match of Survival where all the babyfaces that you know, survived throughout the night took on all the heels that survived throughout the night. And, of course, we had Hulk Hogan, the Ultimate Warrior, and Tito Santana taking on the team of the Visionaries and the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase, with ultimately Hulk Hogan and the Ultimate Warrior surviving. Just an absolute awesome, awesome show, awesome match. Old school Survivor Series at its best. Right now I want to kick it to the phone lines. 706 area code. I think I know this number, but I'm not sure. I'm a little under the weather tonight. Brain's not working right, but you're on the air with PWP Radio. What's your name? Where are you from?
Yo, it's Abe. Did it get better for you in the weather?
What's going on, Abe? Hey, man, yeah, I didn't recognize the number at first. I got to start writing these things down. But, Abe, what's going on, man? We're sharing our favorite Survivor Series moments and matches. So let's hear it. What is your favorite moment or match in Survivor Series history?
Well, I got two. One whole show was the first show in 87. I don't remember ever being a bad match on an 87 card where they had about the first was great opener featuring Savage, Steamboat, Roberts, and like about three Hall of Famers on one team versus another team. I didn't think like one Honky Tonk Man, but there was even one match was awesome at that point. And I remember the main event with Hogan, Team Hall versus Team Andre. Maybe the most quote badass like heel team on Survivor Series history, in my opinion. Andre, the One Man Gang, and Bundy, Rude. I'm trying to remember the last one. Was it Butch Reed? Number five, right?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, you're right. It was Rick Rude, King Kong Bundy, Andre, the One Man Gang, and Butch Reed against the team of Don Morocco, Paul Orndorff, Bam Bam Bigelow, Ken Patera, and the Immortal Hulk Hogan. That is an awesome, awesome match.
And for some reason, it don't get mentioned along with a great Survivor Series match. It don't make lists. I don't know why it don't, for reasons, because that's the match where I think Hogan got beat, but one of the second last that got beat on his team, ended up the Bam Bam to fight three Giants. That was, in my view, the best big man tag team match I've ever seen, as far as, like, everybody was 400 pounds, but there was no, it wasn't slow sluggish. Everything made sense. It was on continuity, great storytelling, and I think the best big man match moment because he almost beat Andre, which nobody ever did at the time. Wasn't holding him. He almost won, but you know Andre won, and of course holds every end, but nobody remembers that. And now kind of race last Andre moment, I believe, since three, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, it was. Yeah, it was. Hulk Hogan and Andre happened that year at WrestleMania. Happened on Saturday Night's Main Event later on in '88, towards the end of that, or towards the end of '87. And then at WrestleMania 4. So this was one of the few times they met one-on-one throughout that two-year period in the 1980s. The one thing I remember about this match, though, Abe, and maybe you've seen this or maybe you remember it, was the pre-match promos by these teams. I remember the Hulk Hogan team just had this, like, crazy, it almost looked like they were drugged out of their minds. They looked so intense and so fired up for the match. I'll never forget it for the rest of my life. It was definitely a moment to remember, and we can't not mention from the show in 1987 the tag team match that took place. It was
the 10 teams, wasn't it?
Yeah, 10 on 10 tag team match. It was 20 man total, and I'll give you the teams right now. It was Strikeforce, the Young Stallions, the Fabulous Rougeaus, the Killer Bees, and the British Bulldogs defeated the Hart Foundation, the Islanders, Demolition, the Bolsheviks, and the New Dream Team, which, of course, was Greg Valentine and Dino Bravo. You want to talk about a who's who, just all these Hall of Famers in one ring at the same time. This match almost went 40 minutes on the show. It was absolutely crazy, if I remember correctly. Awesome match.
I know. It's kind of like, you know, and who survived the end, I think, was a big surprise. It was the Bees and the Young Stallions survived against the Islanders, which is, in my opinion, a bit surprised watching it that later on, which was late watching it that time. Like, you would think this natural that nowadays, Hart Foundation versus Strikeforce now, but back then was unpredictability, which made the Survivor Series match really cool because you didn't know exactly who's going to win or who's going to be the last four or last five standing. And that, to me, was great. And another, I almost got 95 a little bit. The opener, which is underrated, highly underrated, was Horowitz, Bob Harley, Hakushi, and let's see, who else was there? There's someone else on that team. Was that it? Versus the Kid?
It was Horowitz, Bob Harley, Hakushi, and Marty Jannetty. It was a team of
the
underdogs. They were defeated by the team of, it looks like they were called the Body Donnas. It was Skip, Rad Radford, Tom Pritchard, and the 1-2-3 Kid with Sonny and Ted DiBiase in the corner.
Yeah, it was supposed to be Pierre, like from the Quebecers, but I don't know he got fired over, but the Kid took his place, and there was a lot of the first time I ever saw a powerbomb off the top rope in 1995 on WWE television, the first time.
Wow, that's awesome, man. Well, Abe, thanks for joining us. If you want to stay on the line, I'm gonna put you on hold right now. We're going to move along. I got another caller, man. And we're going to move along here. How about 917 area code? You're on PWP Radio. What's your name? Where are you from?
Wow, I disappear for a week and a half. I'm already a forgotten man.
You know what, man? I just mentioned before, John, that I'm a little under the weather today. The brain just isn't working as well as I'm used to it working. But, hey, John,
it's all good.
How you doing, my man?
Good, man. How's everything?
Pretty good. We got a big panel tonight. We're going with our favorite Survivor Series matches and moments. And while I got you right now on the line, let's get your favorite Survivor Series match or moment of all time.
Wow. I was at the Garden in 96, and looking at the way things turned out, it's kind of hard to go against one of, like, three things on that show: Rocky's debut, Austin Hart, or Sid Michaels. But one thing that I liked, and I've been mentioning it on the site recently, is I think the ultimate match of survival is a lost treasure. You know, and I think it was a great concept that could have worked.
Yeah, I agree. I brought it up before. I think that was a concept in 1990 that really helped the show out. And you had all these great teams with Hall of Famers all over the place. And that was your show. You know, it was all elimination matches. But as WWE transcended into the 90s, it became a little bit of a more conventional pay-per-view.
You could have even done that with the winners, you know. I mean, even once you went to, like, the traditional, you know, singles matches and tag matches, I'd have to look back at some of the other shows just to see how it would have panned out. But, well, you know, you could have done something like that at the end, even if you were going to get away from the traditional 5-on-5 or 4-on-4 concept. You know, it could have worked that way.
Yeah, I agree. And, I really like the 5-on-5 or 4-on-4 concept. I really like the 4-on-4 a little bit better because it seemed like it was a cleaner match to me. It could go a little bit slower, or it could go a lot faster if you needed it to. And that makes me beg the question. I'm going to bring Will back right now. Will, do you think that there's been a lost art here where it comes to the elimination match? Should they give us a couple more elimination matches on the show instead of just like one or two a year?
You know, I do miss the concept of having all those, you know, elimination matches. The only reason why it's hard to do it now is, one, because I don't think many people would care too much about it anymore. And the reason why I say that is because a lot of people aren't into a lot of the other characters are not really invested in time. And you really just don't know, you know, do they have a big enough roster right now to even do that? I don't think they honestly do. You know, with the amount of people they have. Right?
Well,
that's strong. It's not strong enough. I think like I said, the tag team match that we saw in Raw, I think that should be part of it. You know, they have to put some, you know, originally they were putting emphasis on the main event being the Survivor Series match, but they felt it wasn't too strong, and John Cena was not going to be in the main event, so they had to kind of flip-flop it, you know, around, because originally that was scheduled. But yeah, it is. I do miss having a lot of the matches on the show being a traditional elimination match, you know. But, you know, I don't know why they don't do it. I think that there's more important things to do. You know, ever since 91 when they had, you know, the WWE Championship match, they changed the whole concept starting at that time.
Well, you know, the last time they really went with this concept and they had a few matches on the show was pretty cool. I believe it was 2006, and you had three elimination matches on the night. You had, like, I can't remember exactly who was on the Legends team, but I remember it was a Legends team.
That was
headed
yeah,
by,
that was in Philly. I went to that one, yes.
Yeah, it was a Legends
Flair
team.
Wasn't that like Flair, Piper, Dusty, and Slaughter?
That was Dusty Rhodes, Ron Simmons, Slaughter, and Flair against the Spirit Squad.
Yeah, against the Spirit Squad.
Right. Yeah, and then on that same night, you had the DX team against the RKO team, and you had Team Cena versus Team Big Show.
Right. That was a great Survivor Series, too. That was a good one. The one I went to. I thought the ending was bad with Batista and Booker T, but, I did like that one. That was actually the last Survivor Series I can remember that I really liked from top to bottom.
Yeah, and
about that card? Two is that it seems like every day or every other day on WWE.com they were announcing the matches.
is like you logged on every day or every other day at like 3 o'clock, and there was a new match announced. It was a really cool way that they got the card out there. And I think they did it over the course of like a week, and it was great because you knew right away what was going to be on that show. They actually spent a lot of time building to it. I remember one of the Raws, the opening segment was all the teams were in the ring together, and they were going to do this big brawl. It was great.
Yeah, I remember they came, like, they had different teams coming out through the crowd. It was every single
yep.
team that was involved in the show. Yeah, I do remember that moment. That was a really cool moment from the last few years of the Survivor Series. But I can't really talk about the Survivor Series without talking about last year's big show from Madison Square Garden. Of course, there was one big traditional Survivor Series match on the show, but the main event provided a memory that will last in my mind forever. When we had The Rock making his in-ring return, teaming up with John Cena against the team of Awesome Truth with The Miz and R-Truth, and The Rock was absolutely on fire that night. And it's also a big night in WWE history because it had CM Punk's, I guess, the beginning of this ridiculous long title run he has that is going to go down in history as one of the longest of all time. So I don't think we can fairly discuss the Survivor Series pay-per-view without talking about this show. And I know you were there last year, Will. What were your thoughts on Survivor Series 2011?
Yeah.
Will, you there?
Oh, sorry. I didn't know that was pointing to me.
No, it's pointing to you. What were your thoughts on Survivor Series 2011?
Yes. Again, I attended that one, as well. The build-up to that whole thing was really great. We had some great matches out of that, too. Wade Barrett and, Cody Rhodes looked strong. That's the first show that Cody Rhodes wore knee pads. And also, another very important part where R-Truth basically told us that pigeons do not talk, if you remember that little promo.
Great promo. That was hilarious stuff.
Yes, so... Awesome Troop was awesome. Cena Rock was great. I thought, last year's was another strong show. And, I remember walking into that arena and how big Zack Ryder was going into that show and that he wasn't performing because Morrison was leaving the company. But, man, that was a moment to see Zack Ryder come out at the end. So obviously the fans, they got what they wanted. I mean, so he did win the belt.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm gonna bring Abe back for a second and ask Abe. Abe, what were your thoughts on Survivor Series 2011 last year with the return of The Rock to the ring?
That got me to want to watch it. That was a drawing point for me to want to see, and I was surprised at how good he looked physically. Like, I knew he was going to get in the ring. I wasn't worried about that. But he was built strong. Like, he looked like he was in the gym for, like, God, like a year straight, just working out. Like, I never seen him cut like that before. And what stuck out to me with the traditional right match that Cody Rhodes won, I was surprised actually that he survived considering it kind of like it would tease a little bit. That he wasn't strong, but he won it. I thought it was a great way to keep him strong for the future in a little bit. And I was surprised that Zack Ryder wrestled tonight, but it was for a long time it was still wild, to want to drop an FMV later so he could win. But I thought it was a good Survivor Series, especially Madison Square Garden, which was a nice full circle out of Rock return where he debuted. At the same group of views, so I thought it was a good idea, a great concept to do.
Yeah, John, same question. I don't know if you were at the show. I know you're a New Yorker, but Survivor Series 2011 was a huge show all around. What were your thoughts about last year's
show? I wasn't at that show, and as I watched it live with a buddy of mine at my house, I just remember being how pissed I was that I wasn't there. It was a very good show. Ziggler Morrison was phenomenal. Crowd being hot for Ryder and the run-in was great. Even show Mark Henry because, you had the anticipation of Bryan running in, especially when show laid out Henry. The traditional Survivor Series match was good. I, like Abe, was a little surprised they put Cody to go over as well as Wade. I thought that was a nice touch for him. Punk was awesome, especially with the Howard Finkel introduction. And then, Roxina was... it was the moment it was meant to be. The only thing I wonder about that show is that if Truth didn't get suspended, I wonder if they would have went over Rock and Cena only to build up some more of the tension leading into WrestleMania. But other than that, I thought it was a phenomenal show.
Yeah, I really don't see that there would be any way that The Rock would not go over at that show, because that was the main reason why everybody was there, I think, is to see The Rock come back and step inside the WWE ring one more time. And I believe that's the consensus all the way around, is that people really loved Survivor Series 2011. But I want to talk about some more controversy that surrounded this show from the years in the past, especially the late 90s. And you probably know what I'm getting at here. And I'm going to start it with Will. You know, 1997 Survivor Series was a big one, and it's probably the most controversial show in wrestling history, and it involved a big Montreal Screwjob. I know this topic has been beaten to death throughout the years, but we really haven't talked about it too much here on Pro Wrestling Powerhouse Radio, if at all. So, Will, I want your candid take on what took place in Montreal at Survivor Series 1997.
So, for me, when I watched it, I had no idea what was going on. I was not too big into the idea of screw jobs and all that stuff. I was just still a kid, you know, so I wasn't really, you know, I didn't understand exactly what was going on. It took me about, I would say, a good even year to realize what really took place and making sense for me, you know. But watching it now, looking back on it and watching all of these documentaries about it, you know, there's two sides to it. I always take Brett's side. I think that was just, you know, something, you know, as a fan, just it was just unbelievable how that all went down. You know, and this is where politics started to really be important in wrestling. I think now the politics were starting to come out during this feud between Shawn and Brett, and it really had a change in wrestling history, because now a lot of the dirt is coming out from the back and now is being seen on television. And now you really can't hide too much stuff anymore, you know, with all that stuff going on, because now people are going to want to know what's going on backstage, who doesn't want to be there, who does. And this moment was the moment, I think, that made, like, internet, you know, want to see what was going on behind the scenes of wrestling, which I wish that I don't want to know about the behind the scenes of wrestling. And I tell you, Jay, before WrestleMania, I don't read spoilers for a whole week. So I know what, you know, because I like to be surprised. And, you know, that's why when Brock Lesnar was coming back at this year, I was like, I didn't even know about it because I didn't even read it. But this moment, I think, brought that out, and I was very taken back at it because it really hurt Bret Hart's career. You know, I mean, Shawn eventually did pay for it, but he did get back into the groove. But it really did hurt, you know, it really did hurt him. And it sucks because Bret Hart could have been really strong in that attitude era.
Yeah, in my mind as well, it was definitely one of the darkest moments in professional wrestling history. I don't look at the bright side of it, where the Attitude Era was kicked off, where the Mr. McMahon character was kicked off, and it provided this essential boom for the business. But I look at it as one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, the man who, you know, transcended what WWF was about in the mid-90s. He was the guy that went on the road with them, was the top draw, would put a great match on with everybody, as we talked about earlier with his match against Diesel. And it's just to treat him like that on this big stage at Survivor Series just wasn't right. I'm glad they kind of settled it and got it out of the way. But it's something that will last forever in my mind. It's just a horrible moment. And let's continue talking about it. Abe, man, the Montreal Screwjob is a controversial topic. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, I was watching it as a kid back too, and to be honest, at the time, I did not understand. Like, it's kind of like I didn't understand the backstage stuff, like Will said. I didn't understand, like, okay, what happened? It's kind of a little blow of your mind. And then I got into DVDs from watching the story of the money, like, this one offered him millions of dollars. And they said, now, we can't afford you and all that. You know, Brett said, you pay tight, you can pay me that lot. But it was. To me, it's kind of weird, like, in a way where it's kind of like, I kind of feel sort of up to it because I'm also a Bret Hart fan, so it's kind of like, it didn't need to be like that. It was kind of, I don't understand why it happened. I understand why they did it from the comedy standpoint, but it wasn't needed to air to the next direction, in my opinion. I understand why they wanted to do it, but it wasn't needed. So it's kind of like, I find it more notorious than famous, you know what I mean? It's more infamous.
Oh, absolutely.
That's my opinion on it.
Absolutely, and, you know, they continue to – I know they buried the hatchet, but, you know, WrestleMania is going to be right here in the East Coast this year, and I just heard recently that Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels are providing a fan experience for people that want to dish out $250, $300 to meet both of them and get a photo op with both of them, get autographs from both of them. There's also going to be a question and answer session with them. So it has really come full circle. I mean, 15 years later, we're getting something completely different now. They're friends, apparently. We've seen the DVD. We've heard them both, you know, their takes in it 1,000 times. But, John, I want to hear your take about the Montreal Screwjob. Some people are with Bret Hart. Some people were with Shawn Michaels. I personally was a Bret Hart guy. So what was your thought on this controversial moment?
I remember it breaking because WWF used to have a website on AOL. And that was, like, the closest thing to, like, an internet website. And they actually posted something about a statement about Bret Hart's future. Then there were some hotlines. Like, there used to be an old Coach Kurt hotline and all that that said that there was a chance he was leaving. And I just remember watching that show, and it really hit me the Monday night before when they were doing one of the video packages, I guess one of the previous four, and Hart wasn't on Raw that Monday night before. And Jim Ross said, "The smart money is you will never see this again." And that's when I was like 21 at the time. I was like, wow, I was like, he's really going to go. I had no clue what the hell was going on, you know, what was going to happen, you know. And I remember just watching that thing, and I was like, oh, my God, what the hell did we just see here? You know, and I taped it, and I rewound that tape a bunch of times. Like, Hart never submitted. And then little by little, it started to come out over the next couple of days. I may be of a weird minority here, but I just think there were too many people involved who gained a lot for this to have been total. I know the stories. I know what Sean says. I know what Hunter says. I know what Bret says. Everyone just gained so much by this that there's a part of me that still refuses to believe this was total work and total screw you, Bret. We're going to get you. You know, and then Nitro the next night, them coming out with the Canadian flags. I have no reason. I agree with Vince in the sense of there is no reason to believe that Bischoff would not have went out on Nitro, especially an hour earlier at 8 o'clock, and announced he signed Hart while he was still champion. That whole thing that Bischoff says that he would have never done that, I don't buy that. I think that is a load of, you know, I don't blame Vince in that effect. Did Hart deserve better? Yes, he did. If they maybe had a week to go with this, this probably would have worked out a little better. Maybe if you had a little more time to get the belt off Hart, you know, before Survivor Series, it probably never happens. But I just remember looking at that thing, and I still watch it to this day. Like, Jesus, you know, how did this happen? But it was definitely a mind blower. But one thing about that card, and I'm sorry to cut you off, if you look at the rest of that card, that card's not bad. You know, it gets lost in the shuffle because it's Montreal, but if you really look at what they had on that show, it wasn't terrible either. You had Austin Owen, you had Kane Foley, you had Shamrock surviving, beating the entire nation basically by himself. It wasn't a terrible card either.
No, it wasn't. It was right smack dab in the middle of the Attitude Era, and you saw a lot of those wrestlers that went on to achieve monumental success throughout that time period on this card, but we'll never really truly understand exactly. We've seen all the documentaries and everybody talk about it and everything, but for me personally, I don't believe a goddamn word Shawn Michaels says, and I use the word goddamn directed at Shawn Michaels for a reason, but I just don't believe every word he says. I mean, you know, especially on that DVD with him, Bret, with Jim Ross, giving the questions to both of them about the parallels in the career and whatnot, I just don't buy it. I mean, there was things that he seemed to not remember, not recall. There was moments where he just looked awkward when Bret Hart was kind of, like, telling his side of the story, and he was kind of emotional about it, and you could still hear the pain in his voice because he's the guy that gave his heart and soul to the WWF. For the 12 years prior to this, you know, and, and he went out there and did the right thing every single night. So to think that Shawn Michaels didn't have everything to do with this, and, you know, he kind of spearheaded it. We all know it was Triple H's idea. I think that's been publicized, that he kind of came up with it. But, you know, Vince Russo, Vince McMahon, whatever, planned it out, Pat Patterson. You know, who the fuck knows? There's so many, like you said, John, there were so many people involved that you just really never know exactly what happened. But, you know, it's a moment that will live on forever. It's infamous. And before we get going into the next Survivor Series I want to talk about, I want to take a short, tiny little intermission here. And I'm going to give you a clue with the song I'm going to play, what Survivor Series we're going to be talking about. So we'll be right back here on TWP Radio.
Cards, break the rules, that's who you are. Whoever said play it safe, never play the game. So many players, but too many pawns, too many judges say what's right or wrong. But them jumping through the fire, if they want to.
All right, so that's a little hit of what we're going to be talking about right now, and I'm going to shoot it to Will, who's going to be leaving us for his post-volleyball, I guess, shower or whatever, but he's going to leave us then. But Will, let's talk about Survivor Series 1998, an unprecedented tournament. Well, you know, I'd say not really unprecedented, but kind of the way they did it in the 90s, the WWF Championship wasn't really treated this way as much. You know, the last one was 1988 at WrestleMania 4. But, Will, your thoughts on the Deadly Game Tournament in Survivor Series 1998?
I did like the concept of the tournament. You know, they haven't done something like that, like you said, in a while. It was really interesting, you know. I was even wondering if they don't have the Survivor Series-type matches, are they going to still get the same traction? But, yeah, it was a big deal. They put a lot of emphasis on this card. It was very strong, great build-up to the card, great controversy throughout the whole thing. I really actually enjoyed 98. And, you know, my friends are Rock fans, and Stone Cold got screwed right in the middle, you know, in the semifinal match. That was a complete shock, because I never thought they would put Mankind and The Rock in the main event. I didn't even know. I mean, Mankind's always cheered, and The Rock is cheered, so they're kind of like two faces going against each other. And it was a great ending to the show, you know, pay homage to last year's Survivor Series. But yeah, it was a great, because that was like the breakout moment for Mick Foley. You know, he got screwed over by Vince McMahon after being told these wonderful things, and Vince was like playing him up to be the guy, and then all of a sudden it was The Rock the entire time, and The Rock was just, oh, it was so good. Well, that's how you book a show. It was just so well done.
Yeah, it was absolutely amazing booking. I really am a mark for WWF in 1998. I loved everything they did.
Who wasn't?
Pretty much from top to bottom. Yeah, I absolutely loved it. And to string Mick Foley, Mankind, along like that throughout the show, you know, you put him against, you know, Dwayne Gill to kick it off, you know, a big mystery guy. Then you put him against his old buddy Al Snow. And each and every time, Mankind is just winning easy. It's easy, except for Austin, obviously, where the big screw job came into play with Shane McMahon as the referee. But it was just absolutely fantastic booking. And during that whole time period, you know, where Mankind's winning these matches easily, you don't even realize that The Rock is as well. The Rock is just posting.
The Rock is just posting.
Right along with the show. And getting an echo, guys. Hold on 1 second real quick. I got a little echo here at PWP Radio. Give me 1 second. I'm going to take a quick timeout. Once again, hold on 1 second.
I'm a nice man.
Yeah, I'm an ass man.
Yeah! All right, I figure I'd play that music because I'm going to kick it to my man John from Brooklyn. John, man, Survivor Series 1998, the Deadly Game Tournament. What were your thoughts on what transpired here?
Survivor Series 98 was awesome. I mean, the tournament was a great concept. It was, like Will said, it was really well pushed. It was really put together. And the best part about it was there was probably, when you look at that field, there was five or six ways they could have gone. I mean, obviously Austin. They were building up Foley. Rocky was starting to get his push. And, oh, by the way, there was Undertaker Kane, you know, in that as well. And the one guy who kind of was slept on, but they kind of made a, they always kind of went back to it, was because of his tournament experience earlier in the year, was Shamrock. He won the King of the Ring, and he won the IC title tournament at Nassau Coliseum. The only guy missing, and it's a shame he was injured, was Triple H from that show. I mean the tournament was amazing, and you know, you really had no idea where it was going, and you know, every little turn here, Shane McMahon turning on Austin, and then the turn on Foley, it was just, it was really good. It's something that, you know what, if Rocky's going to win the title at the Rumble and maybe even defeat Cena at WrestleMania, I would love to see maybe, you know, later in 2013, you go with a tournament, because if you could book it anywhere near as good as 1998 Deadly Game was booked, it would be phenomenal.
Yeah, I'm waiting for the day where they decide to give us another one-night tournament for the WWE Championship, and with CM Punk holding it for nearly a year straight, I don't know if it's going to happen anywhere in the near future, but I'm hoping at some point it does. Next year would be a great moment for it, though. And Abe, final thoughts for Survivor Series 1998, man?
Well, back on that baby title tournament they did do back last year after Cena, Punk, on the next night of Raw, so just letting you know they did that. But the 98 tournament, I'll be honest, I wasn't the biggest fan after watching it, because I remember I rented it on tape, like, when it came out, and I was looking at it. They wasn't too fired. There was, like, a lot of matches. I remember the ending stuff with The Rock, and I was glad that happened, but I don't remember really, like, being five matches that stuck out to me. Like, I got to watch this. I like the McMahon involvement for Spur and Austin, and what they did leading up to it, every connection they did, we was going into it, the pay-per-view itself. I'm not a big fan of it. I do like how they had the swerve where they had The Rock go to a heel and how they did it with him, and how through four like they did 97 while playing that. But outside of that, I'm not a big fan of pay-per-view, the body of it. I like the ending of it, but I'm not a big fan of the whole body of it.
Right, I can see what you're saying there. I mean, the whole point of it was really good. It was a great concept. But I'm looking at the matches right now, you know, and I don't think any – I think only, what is it, three matches on the whole night went over 10 minutes. There wasn't – I mean, The Rock and Big Boston went 3 seconds on the record. You know, Mankind, Al Snow didn't even go 4 minutes. It was one of those shows where they had to kind of go straight through it real quick to provide enough time for the main event.
Well, the reason I know why they in that 3 seconds, it was because the Rockstar Corporation, they're kind of on a sneak, so it's kind of like, ha, he pinned the boss in, but it's already set up where I'm in the corporation, so that's where that little stuff, and the match that went, like me, was 7 minutes. The only match where that stuck out to me was Austin Foley, because they wrestled before the yesterday chemistry, but, like, Undertaker, Rock, I don't know if the crowd into that stuff, like, before that Mankind, boss, anything, you take that out, I don't know the crowd really into the show all the way through from top, middle, end. I don't remember the crowd being into that much.
Well, they were just pumped to see who would be. They were waiting for the end. They were waiting for the arc of the story to really take place and for that final chapter to be read to them. And when The Rock ultimately defeated Mankind to become WWF champion, they really came unglued, and it was a great moment in WWE history, and was really the beginning to the road to WrestleMania 15, you know? But, thanks, Abe. Thanks for joining us tonight, Abe, on PWP Radio. We really appreciate it. All right, man, have a good night.
You too. It's my pleasure.
All right, that was Abe from Georgia. Abe's the man. He's been a great contributor to the show the last few weeks. Great job, Abe. But right now, I know Will's going to back out on us in a moment, and I just want to kick it to you real quick before you leave. Parting words on Survivor Series as a whole, and your thoughts on this year's Survivor Series, what's going to transpire?
Well, you know, Survivor Series to me is, you know, I feel was always more important than SummerSlam. I think it has more value. It came before SummerSlam, you know, it was their second biggest pay-per-view. I think it's always a good watchable. Something good always happens on these shows. At least something always sticks out. Never really a bad Survivor Series I could ever say, except for maybe 92. But other than that, you know, there wasn't really a bad Survivor Series that I could ever recall. So as far as this year goes, I like the build-up between Ziggler, you know, Ziggler's team and the Foley team. But I think CM Punk will retain the championship and continue forward. I will not be able to watch the show, so I will. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to skip this year because of a meeting. But, you know, I'm hoping that they do well. I'm hoping some good moments happen. And, of course, I hope The Miz becomes the sole survivor for Team Foley and officially becomes the face of the WWE Universe. And I am TLD, TLDWrestling.com, and I'm out.
Good riddance. You and The Miz, man. You got this, like, man crush on The Miz like I've never heard before in my life, Will. Jesus.
Like you do Miz. For Sheamus.
No, I don't like it. I hate Sheamus. But you absolutely love The Miz, and I just don't get it. I don't see it happening. I don't see anything
good
happening out of
it. Okay, I'll tell you. You want to know why? You want to know why I like him? You want to know the reason?
I think I know why.
Because he's awesome.
Oh, go ahead. All right, he's awesome. Yeah. Thanks, Will. Thanks for joining us on PWP Radio. Well, I really appreciate it, bro. All right, that was Will PLD Vafidez. Is it always will be the Miz's number one fan. But, John, it's just me and you right now. Let's continue. We got another little less than a half hour on the show. Once again, if you want to call in, get your voice heard. We're looking for the best Survivor Series moments of all time, maybe your favorite Survivor Series moment of all time, or match. Please call in 760-888-5749. We've had a great show. We've covered a lot of content throughout this last hour. And, John, I mean, you can't really talk about Survivor Series. And I know I've said this before with the Montreal Screwjob, but in 2002 was the first ever Elimination Chamber match. And this, not only to me, is one of the greatest Survivor Series of all time, although it lacked an Elimination traditional match, but it is one of the best WWE pay-per-views of all time in my mind. Came from Madison Square Garden, and just the monumental portion of it with the first ever Elimination Chamber, where Shawn Michaels really coming back and finishing his comeback by winning the World Heavyweight Championship. It was an awesome moment through and through, and it signified the beginning of Brock Lesnar's run as a babyface, which was really cool as well. So let's hear his thoughts, John, on Survivor Series 2002.
Well, I was there. I was at the Garden for it. And, I mean, you, from the beginning, you got the Dudley reunion right out front with the table match, which was actually really good with 3-minute warning and what was their manager's name? Rico. Against Spike, Bubba, and Jeff Hardy. You got the run-in at the end with D-Von, which was great. Kidman, Jamie Noble for the Cruiserweight title was on there as well, which was a little surprising to see Kidman win because you were getting the Jamie Noble was getting like that redneck millionaire push with Nydia. You had Trish and Victoria in a hardcore match, which was actually good. Lesnar, Big Show, the build-up to that, as obvious as it was, especially with Heyman in the back saying, I'm going to make sure my client leaves with the WWE championship, even though you knew it was coming, was still great. And have Lesnar lose, I mean, as quick as he did, I mean, that match, I don't even think that match went 10 minutes, was good. What else do you have? Oh, you had a great triple threat tag title match. You had Los Guerreros, Edge and Rey, and Angle and Benoit in a three-way elimination tag match, which I mentioned it in my article that I sent you today, is just it's lost in the shuffle of everything that went on in 02. I mean, that match is just off the charts good. And you also had the debut with Scott Steiner, which I'm telling you live, there are very few pops I've been to live
that were bigger than when Steiner came out. And then the Elimination Chamber, for the first one that it was, you know, it was really a sight to see. And, you know, the HBK win, capping off that comeback, you know, when we really didn't know where he was headed, you know, post-SummerSlam and post-Survivor Series, how his back was going to hold up. It was really good. And, you know, just one of the, like you said, one of the best shows of all time. And, you know, it was really well done. It was a great show.
Well, let me ask you something. You were there live, and I've never seen an Elimination Chamber match live. What was the experience like of seeing that match? Because I know I've seen Hell in a Cell live before, and that was kind of cool. But Elimination Chamber, there's a lot going on in that match. And what's the view like? Was it cool to see?
Okay, you know that old setup that they had up until about 2 years ago at the Garden, where they would actually use the side aisle as the entrance?
Yes, I do.
Okay, whenever I go to the Garden for a show, that's the view I would get. So I had that straight side up elevated. It's not hard. It's not a bad view. The only problem is that it's easy to lose guys if they're up against the pods. So if there's something going on between two pods and it's not what you're straight on looking at, it's hard to catch because you have all that steel and all that chain link. That was a little hard to follow. Like, I missed the Van Damme jump onto Triple H where he crushed Triple H's larynx because I couldn't see it. When I got the replay on that Tuesday is when I saw it. So I didn't understand. All we saw was Triple H laying in the corner. We were like, what the hell? What, you know, what's he doing, you know? So there is some stuff you can miss. It's a little bit of a hard view because there's just so much material there. But it is a sight to see. I mean, seeing that thing for the first time hanging above the ring in the Garden was, you know, it was pretty intense.
Yeah, it's definitely a match that I'd like to see live someday. If they ever bring it back here to the East Coast, I would definitely go see an Elimination Chamber match. But, yeah, you brought up Scott Steiner, and this is one of those moments to me that was kind of like, you know, I love seeing Steiner back, and I popped for it big time because he was just the man. But I wish he would have come back a year earlier or even more than that, a year and a half earlier, and been a part of the Invasion angle. And that leads me to talk about a year earlier at the Survivor Series where the culmination of the Invasion happened. And if a guy like Scott Steiner was a part of it, another big WCW name, or, you know, obviously Ric Flair, the NWO, guys like that, it probably wouldn't have left such a bad taste in our mouths, and it definitely did for just about all wrestling fans. There are very few people out there that can defend what took place during the WWF WCW Invasion angle, but it culminated at the Survivor Series, another big moment in wrestling history, whether you like it or you don't. Team WWF defeated Team Alliance, that was WCW and ECW joined together at the hip. And I don't know, man. I remember being happy that this was over at the time and just looking forward to Raw back to normalcy the next night. But there was also a part of me that thought that just maybe we'd be watching Nitro the next night instead of Raw. But, John, what were your thoughts on the 2001 WWF Survivor Series?
All right. You touched on something about 2 minutes ago about how good it could have been. I was at Madison Square Garden for the SmackDown taping after King of the Ring. They did the double shot at the Garden for Raw and SmackDown. I was at SmackDown. Let me tell you something. When Chuck Palumbo and Sean O'Hare came out through the crowd and then just got the beating of a lifetime, that place went nuts. When Booker attacked Austin, same thing. Place went nuts. It's a shame how in 3 months they messed this up. Because of that, it kind of takes away from 01. You know, you knew really no one of any value on the Alliance side was really going to do anything. I was actually surprised the Dudleys won. I had no clue they were going to break up the Hardys. They were going to eventually do that weak attempt at breaking up the Hardys. The test push was a little too much with the Battle Royal, although I thought that was a cool concept. You know, one guy from each show could potentially get immunity, but again, what was the point when an Alliance guy won, what they should have had was maybe the last two guys, a WWE guy and an Alliance guy, and then in the next night on Raw they would face off for immunity. You know, but that's a different thing. And the tag match, I mean, the only thing the tag match really had on it was who was going to turn. You know, and you actually got like two turns out of that. You got Jericho turned heel, basically. Angle turned on the Alliance, but then basically turned heel because of it. And then Austin indirectly turned face because of it. That was really it.
Right. Well, you know, the whole thing about that was is they were trying to book themselves out of a corner. They were trying to get their WWF contracted talent who have been on the roster throughout this entire time. You know, a guy like Test. They wanted to make sure that he wasn't a part of this defunct brand where, you know, you took guys like Lance Storm and Chuck Palumbo, like you mentioned, guys like that, and you basically took them off TV for a little while to repackage them, rebrand them, and bring them back in a different way. They wanted to keep their guys that they felt were already established WWF superstars and get them back on Raw immediately. That's why, you know, Austin was a WWF champion at the time. That's why the Dudley boys defeated the Hardy boys. You know what I mean? Because the unified champions. Now you get them back on the show.
Yeah, that was a cool little thing that they announced beforehand, that the champions were safe. You know, that they would still have jobs. So you knew Van Damme wasn't going anywhere. You know, win or lose. But you know, it's a shame. And you know, everyone kind of beats up Vince and, you know, the creative for it, but what a lot of people also have to remember is that a lot of those guys that came in late 91 after this angle or early, I mean, not 91, 01 or 02 when Nash came back and Ray came back, a lot, and Flair the night after, was a lot of these guys had high-end WCW contracts that it didn't pay for them to take the buyout. That, you know, it would have gotten them out of those deals. So that's why you didn't get a lot of bigger name guys at the time. And that's why ECW had to be thrown in and merged with them, because they just didn't have the guys. If they would have waited 6 months on this, I mean, I know it was hot being into WrestleMania that year, but if you could have waited 6 months on it, you would have, and maybe, like you said, ended this at Survivor Series 02 when you could have had a guy like Scott Steiner. You know, Rey Mysterio was in at that point. Eddie Guerrero was back. Benoit was back. You know, even Triple H was back. You could have played some of that. It would have been 10 times better.
I agree with you. They should have waited on the angle. There was no reason to rush into it right away. People knew the WCW brand. They knew the ECW brand. You could have still incorporated both brands, you know, maybe not put them together. Maybe have, like, a three-way fight between the three brands. Who knows?
But yeah.
They really rushed into it. They bought WCW, and they pulled the trigger on this invasion angle way too soon.
I mean, it's fine. You announce the purchase. You run the both shows simultaneously. I mean, that's a moment that will never, ever be duplicated again, even if Vince was to buy TNA, you know, at some point. You'll never get the two shows on at the same time with him on both shows. But you could have slowly built it here and there. You know, even if you wanted to debut some of the lesser-known guys from WCW, just to start to get them on TV and get them out there, that would have been fine. But you would have waited 6 months. You would have Scott Steiner, Kevin Nash, Rey Mysterio, Bischoff would have been around already. Plus, you still had your guys like Booker. You know, Triple H would have been back. Eddie, Benoit, Chavo, all those guys. It just would have made it so much more deeper that you wouldn't have had to turn the entire WWF heel roster into the Alliance. You could have kept, you know, WWF heels. I think at the time, the only heels that stayed heel in WWF was X-Factor. Everyone else basically went Alliance, and it was stupid when you had, you know, Christian and Test, you know, being main guys in the Alliance, but they're WWF guys. No, I mean, Austin, all right, I guess he had the WCW ties. You know, Big Show could have even turned. They never once, except in the beginning with Shane, you know, way back towards WrestleMania, they never once touched on Big Show's history. You know, you could have had Big Show as a question mark guy in that final match. Well, wait a second, you know, we're talking about this one, that one. He's got WCW ties as well. Same thing with Jericho. They never played any of that stuff.
Yeah, it was definitely disappointing. You could have as easily as taken just the Big Show and Chris Jericho and flipped them to the WCW side. All right, you flip those two guys and you instantly add credibility to that brand without bringing every fucking heel that you have over that had no ties to WCW whatsoever. It didn't really make any sense, you know. They just what they did is they created this new I don't want to say brand. I guess alliance is the right word to say, which they use. They created this alliance of guys and didn't even really bank on the WCW or ECW name anymore at that point. It was kind of just an afterthought compared to what they created, this alliance, you know?
You know, I mean, which, all right, fine. I get that. You know, the two companies are going to, you know, align to take out the company that put them both out of business. I get that. But like you just said, when did Christian ever do anything with WCW or ECW? When did Test? You know, and there's probably a million guys I'm forgetting, but where were any of those guys? You know, it just didn't work, and it took away from that entire show. That show, a year later, even with half those guys, you know, and, you know, you want to really take it somewhere, you could have had someone turn around, you know, because Taker was the American Badass at the time, have someone turn around and be like, you started there too. Now you create a question mark on Taker.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And even some, you know, and another thing that doesn't make any sense to me, I'm going to bring this up real quick, was Kurt Angle. I mean, Kurt Angle's the type of guy who, and I know it came out as it was a big swerve at the end, but he bled WWF, man. He was a WWF guy. He never had any ties to WCW whatsoever, and all of a sudden, he's a part of the alliance. I mean, he was going through wars with Stone Cold Steve Austin, and he's a part of the alliance. I know it was a swerve. I know it was a swerve, but it was a fucking ridiculous swerve. It was absolutely pointless.
Yeah, it made no sense. And I like how they, you know, they used it to turn Angle heel the night after. That was fine. But at the time, it made no sense.
Well, that was
none.
Another
especially
way of them. Go ahead.
No, I said, especially if you really want to get technical and really look at it, Angle wanted nothing to do with ECW after the crucifixion angle at the show he was at.
Right, yeah, you're right, and that's just another way of them trying to tie up loose ends. You know, that's just another way of them trying to say, okay, we need Kurt Angle to be a heel. How are we going to make that happen? We need Austin to be a babyface. How are we going to make that happen? And that's all they did. They were just worried about what was going to take place from after Survivor Series on.
Yeah, but here's what didn't make any sense of it, okay? And you know, look at what indirectly they played leading into Unforgiven. They played Angle as the American Hero in September of 2001, which is fine. No problem with that, okay? Even though that was, you know, you take the guy a month later, okay? You're American Hero, and you turn him. Forget what the end result ended up being. You turned him. This makes sense, right? Forget about what the post-Survivor Series plans were. You could have turned Angle instantly. That's the beauty of Angle's character at the time. You could have bounced him back and forth. He was the biggest face you had, and you turned him for no reason whatsoever. It made no sense.
Yeah, you pretty much just summed it up there, and I think we're gonna finish this night off. We've got about, I'm going to say, 10, 11 minutes left in the show, and let's finish this off, John. We've covered so much for tonight on the show about Survivor Series, and I'm not feeling 100%. I was still working to help clean up the shitstorm over here in Jersey that Hurricane Sandy left us with. And,
how are you guys making out over there?
It's okay. I mean, I'm doing okay personally, but the fact is a lot of people that are around the Barrier Islands have lost their homes and lost everything in their homes. A lot of possessions are gone, and I've been working with this older couple. They've been paying me, which I appreciate and stuff, but I would easily just as much have donated my time to them. But today the job involved being inside their house for an extended period of time, and I am definitely allergic to cats, and they have four cats, and I just did not bode well for me, especially with the rain. There was not a lot of fresh air to breathe out there, and the place is getting moldy because it just was flooded, completely flooded. So anyway, I'm not feeling that great tonight, but we're going to leave this tonight, John, with our thoughts on Survivor Series 2012. What is going to take place this coming Sunday? We've got ourselves what seems to be, it started off as not such a great build-up because there wasn't a lot of time to really do it. But now, to me, especially last night, WWE has really turned up the pace. They put it into a different gear to kind of get people hyped up for this show. I mean, they built up Antonio Cesaro defending against R-Truth, which is a great match, especially if Cesaro retains, to try to keep him going in the right direction, a positive direction, and bring prominence back to the United States Championship.
Yeah, and,
you know,
and it's a name for, it's a guy for Cesaro to go over. It's perfect.
Yeah, R-Truth is a transitional guy. I mean, I don't think he's going to win. I'm going to say Antonio Cesaro is going to retain. But we actually saw WWE build up this match last night. So right now, we have five matches on the card. It's Team Foley versus Team Ziggler, Big Show versus Sheamus, CM Punk versus John Cena versus Ryback, Eve defending against Caitlin, and as I said, Cesaro versus R-Truth. So I want your prediction, and let's start off with Team Foley versus Team Ziggler.
This is probably the hardest match to pick on the card. And the only reason why I say that now is because of what happened last night with Brian, The Miz, and Kane. I would say Miz turning face would probably lead to them winning, but I could also see something happen, but it's happening with Brian that, you know, leads to Miz losing at the end. And I think Ziggler needs this. You know, I don't think he can keep jobbing to the big stars and looking really good doing it to be a serious contender with the briefcase. He's got to get a win here, and I don't know. I mean, I guess gun to my head, I'm going to go Team Ziggler.
I'm going to agree with you, and I'm going to say Team Ziggler wins, and I think Dolph Ziggler will be the sole survivor of this team. There's a possibility that Wade Barrett could join him as co-survivors, but I'm saying Dolph Ziggler is the sole survivor. I think it comes down to The Miz turning heel. I don't think he's going to – I mean, he is a heel, so it can't be really turning heel, but turning on Team Foley and kind of going back over to Team Ziggler, because I just don't see The Miz working as a babyface. I'm not for it. I'm going to stand my ground here. I don't think it'll work if they do it. I just don't see him in that role. I don't see it happening, and he's probably going to turn on Daniel Bryan. I see it coming down to – Daniel Bryan, The Miz, against Dolph Ziggler. The Miz turns on Bryan, and Dolph Ziggler ends up winning. I don't know if The Miz is going to lay down. Maybe The Miz gets eliminated, then turns on Bryan. But I see Ziggler being the sole survivor in this match because he needs to continue this push forward. He needs to be over. And, hell, maybe he'll even start something with Foley during the match. Maybe he'll get physical with Foley, and that's always good because Foley provides that extra push for a heel, especially if he gets a shippy down. So moving along, and to backtrack a little bit, Ziggler is also involved in this storyline with John Cena, so you know it's probably going to lead to a one-on-one between those two. So, John, your prediction on The Big Show defending his World Heavyweight Championship against Sheamus this Sunday at Survivor Series.
Okay, I'm going to take into the fact that there's already some rumors running what's going to be a TLC. But I won't get into that. But I do see Big Show retaining. I think it's too quick. I didn't agree with this title change to begin with, but I think it's too quick to pop all back and forth.
Yeah, I'm gonna agree with you again.
I think Show's gonna get DQ'd.
I think ultimately Big Show is a transitional champion, and here's why. He's the type of guy who's got instant credibility. He's been around forever. He's believable. He's, you know, 7 foot tall, 450 pounds, has this ridiculous knockout punch. And ever since he's turned heel, he's had this mean streak going, which is cool. But to take the belt off him this quick, I think is counterproductive. I see it happening somewhere between maybe TLC and Elimination Chamber. Maybe he'll hold it until Elimination Chamber and drop it inside that match. I think that would be cool because how do you really beat the Big Show inside that structure? It just, it bows a good story. So I'm going to pick Big Show to defeat Sheamus, but not clean. Or like you said, it could be a disqualification. Maybe Big Show gets disqualified and Sheamus wins. But Big Show will retain the championship one way or another. I don't see Ziggler cashing in yet, especially not this Sunday. But I believe Big Show retains in some way, shape, or form. And we're going to go with Eve Torres defending her WWE Divas Championship against Caitlin for shits and giggles. Let's get a prediction for this match.
Eve. I have no idea where they're going with this division.
No, me either. I'm going to take Eve, too. So we're 3-3 right now. Cesaro R-Truth, we talked about that briefly before. You're taking Cesaro, correct?
Yeah.
And I take Cesaro, too. I think his push is going in the right direction, and it needs to continue that way. Antonio Cesaro is the man. And let me just, while we're on him for a second, I just want to talk about this comment I wrote on Facebook the other day, and I've been in a heated battle with some of these guys from this one message board, and they think that Antonio Cesaro is the same character in WWE that he was in Ring of Honor, and that is not true at all. He was never a rugby player in Ring of Honor, so fuck you guys, you're wrong. All right, now the big main event of the show. No doubt in my mind this will end the show. This will probably be a great match. I'm hoping this delivers. You know, CM Punk is going to get his ass kicked. He's going to get tossed around the ring. And the main dynamic here, though, I think, is Cena versus Ryback. But we've got a triple threat match for the WWE Championship. CM Punk defends against John Cena and Ryback. John, this is a tough prediction, man. Who do you think?
Punk.
And you think it's going to be? How do you think it's going to happen? How do they get this to happen where CM Punk goes back so far against the wall and walks out with the belt?
It's going to come down to Cena and Ryback, and Punk's going to sneak in the back door. Don't get me wrong. You're right. They're starting to play up this dynamic between Cena and Ryback, and I don't want to say that it's going to be TLC, although I kind of mentioned that on Mine and Seth's show last Wednesday, you know, about the possibility of doing that. He's going to sneak out the back door with it. It's made too obvious for him to lose, so of course he'll win. But I'm a little interested to see the physicality between Cena and Ryback. The good thing about this is that all the reports from Europe when Cena was wrestling, he's fine. He doesn't have any mobility issues with the elbow, so health wise Cena should be fine. So and Punk's gonna bring the best out of both of them. I really want to see Cena and Ryback go at it, and then let's just Punk. You know, maybe. Maybe Ryback hits Cena with the shell shock, and then Punk just kind of kicks Ryback and drops on Cena quick enough to get the pin, or vice versa. But that's how I think Punk's going to do it.
Yeah, I think CM Punk also retains. So we completely agree throughout the night on Survivor Series 2012. CM Punk needs this reign to continue. You know, he brought up the fact that he was surpassing Diesel on the list of WWE Championship reigns. And it needs to go on. It needs to keep going. And until Royal Rumble was my prediction, I think he'll drop it to The Rock. But CM Punk,
I'm WrestleMania.
Yeah, you think he's going to hold till WrestleMania, huh?
I think so. Like I said to you before, let's have some more Punk Cena screwy finishes and bring it to a head at WrestleMania with maybe Austin as the special ref.
Oh, that would be a cool dynamic.
Especially after Austin's comments already this week.
Well, hey, you can definitely talk about that tomorrow night on OU Didn't Know Radio, but I'm going with CM Punk. And let's plug OU Didn't Know. Let's plug the show real quick, because tomorrow night
we have the brand new
Pro Wrestling Syndicate Tri-State Champion, Starman, will be on the show live. And I don't know if you remember Starman from the old wrestling video game on Nintendo when we were children, John.
Nintendo,
Yeah, he's going to be on the show live. I've never heard him talk. I've never heard him say a word, but Seth and I were in Broadway the other night at PWS. The show must go on. A great show. Fun wrestling, independent wrestling at its absolute best. You saw Starman win the Tri-State title. You saw Matt Hardy win the PWS championship from Kevin Matthews. I also got to see Davey Richards and Matt Hardy in the ring together. Kevin Steen versus Sammy Callahan. And I got to meet Jerry Lynn, which was
the first time. Right?
Yeah.
Steen lost
for
the first time in forever.
Yeah, exactly. And Sammy Callahan was the winner. And I also got to meet Jerry Lynn, which was a major markup moment for me. It was a great night all in all. I met Colt Cabana. Cabana and Lynn put on a fun match. But definitely listen to Oh You Didn't Know Radio tomorrow night, but we're winding down tonight, and it's been a great show. I'd like to thank Eve Freeman, Mr. Main Event Brian Waters, Will Vafitas, my man John. I am Jersey Shore Jay, coming to you live each and every Tuesday night. PWP Radio, keep it real, everybody, and have yourself a great night.
Later.